are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives.
And with it online, they're making lists. All the pointless posts we're proud of, and all the experts we dismissed. I don't mind, I spend a lot of time feeling.
If I can, how long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand.
Good Friday morning. If you just heard that song by,
Ellie Goulding.
How Long Will I Love You, my theme song for about 2 years now. Still gives me shivers. I just, it's a song about commitment and our commitment to freeing the people from the streets. It's a nice minus 14 today. For the middle of January, we can handle that. But if you're out there 24/7, any temperature is not a good temperature for you, and I can tell you that from experience. Today we have. By the way, I hope everybody had a good holiday season and got over the trials of it and enjoyed the good times from the holiday season, because people suffer and celebrate both. And sometimes for me, being really personal about this, Christmas is the worst day of the year for me, because I don't have family to spend it with, and it becomes a very lonely day. And so many people out there are the very same. And you know, one thing that I relate to is when I was at Salvation Army for 14 and a half months during the second stay of my homeless life, I really appreciated the fact that they had a really, really big dinner and all that kind of thing and gave everybody presents. But the fact that I had to depend on an organization like Sally Ann to do that for me made me very uncomfortable. But today we have a person with lived experience on the show, and very unique. He contacted the station manager, Rob, and asked if he could talk to me and be on the show. And of course, we always look for lived experience stories, because they're the ones that are at the heart of everything that we do. And today we have Adam Dolwin on the show, and happy to have you, Adam. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm really happy and excited and privileged to be here today.
Well, it's a privilege to have you on. Yeah. And like I do with every single show and every single guest, I'll just ask you to give a brief bio of your life, of your experience, and we'll get into your experience more later. But just a brief bio as to who you are, what you're comfortable with sharing.
Yeah. Well. I'm 57 years old, and I lived in Winnipeg most of my life. I guess half my life I lived in St. Laurent by Lake Manitoba, and that's sort of leads up to the main reason I'm here. My family got affected by the 2011 flood, and that's where it all started, basically. I was out there trying to help out and recover, and there's quite the backstory to that, but that led me, all those experiences led me up to being in this studio today, because I listen to your show religiously. It's on the radio
and
all the time.
I thank you for that.
Yeah. No, I tell everyone to be quiet, and I turn it up, and I say, you better listen to this guy. And if they know me, they do. Yeah. But it's, when I listen to your show, I'm not going to lie, I got to pull a vehicle over sometimes and just wipe away some tears, because one of the reasons I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here is because we both have lived experience. And when you speak, it just hits me in the soul, because I say to myself, this guy knows, and only lived experience people know. And you can't know, you'll never know unless you're lived experience. And that's the challenge. And that's what I can relate to you when you speak.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's so true. And, that's a problem with, sometimes when we're dealing with governments trying to make policy. They make policy rather naively sometimes. And the big thing is, like, I push for, to be that person, or have somebody with lived experience within the walls of City Hall and within the government, the provincial government, when they're talking about, the encampments, and when they're talking about homelessness, because it just seems like every move they make hurts people on the street and hurts people in the camps and takes away their rights. And you and I both have that intimate experience of being homeless. And I asked you before, basically, how long were you, houseless or homeless?
Yeah, I'm coming into the show unscripted, really.
Okay.
I made a few notes, because there's a lot of talking points that I bring up to people, because, and you can relate 100%, it's endless. I'm sure every day you speak to people about lived experience, and the people that don't have lived experience, you could talk to them until you're blue in the face, and they'll never really know. They'll understand, but so sometimes I say to people, okay, well, how about this? Give me your keys to your house, give me your wallet, and go walk the back lanes for 30 days. And then tell me how you feel after that.
Yes.
If you're still alive.
And, one of the things that people never realize, it's like a full-time job being homeless, being on the streets, going for, trying to find meals at the service providers, if you go there, or walking from service providers to service provider, from Agape to Lighthouse to UGM or to Main Street Project or Shalom for a meal. It's a tough thing. I was isolated, living not in the downtown area. I was living on the corner of McPhillips and William in the backseat of the car, and I never used any service providers, and I suffered from that. I lost 32 pounds, but I was too proud to use service providers. But service providers are there for a reason, like the Shalom's for their three meals a day, or Salvation Army, or Lighthouse. Did you access those services?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. there was a few different experiences, and there's quite the backstory, and it's very intense.
You have time.
Yeah, there's still quite a bit of trauma there.
Sure.
But like the main talking points would be two different experiences. I guess picking up on what you said about access to services, there's a whole new aspect when you're rural.
Oh yes, absolutely.
You don't got cell service. Yeah. It's a 20-minute drive.
So you're homeless out in the country.
Well, there's two different main experiences that started. I was actually living in BC, and at the time that mm-hmm. the 2011 flood had, so I had to migrate back to Winnipeg to help my family. So I went through homelessness during that time, and I was living in a storage bin.
Oh, well.
And then I guess I'll share a story here. When I first
are you comfortable with?
Yeah, this is a good one. When I first moved to BC, you know, I never had lived experience, and I'm a young guy, and I got mm-hmm. a truck and a girlfriend, mm-hmm. and I feel real good about myself. And my girlfriend was always really nice at the time, and we drove up to 7-Eleven. And there's a guy named Jimmy out there, and he's talking to himself. And
hey, got any money?
Comes up to the truck, and she was always really nice, and she had no lived experience, but you know, it was. So she went, she gave him some money, and was talking to him. And I said, "Come on, let's go. Don't talk to that homeless guy. Look at him. Why would you do that? Right?" And so years went by, and then you know the relationship ended, and then I found myself living in that storage bin in the same town, and I'm panicking and what the heck? And you know, like you said, you're paralyzed and you go, how could this happen to me? And the landlord was renovating the place and I was in between homes, and there's a whole backstory there. But basically, you know, I came out of the storage bin, haven't showered in a while, and just trying to deal with this nightmare. It just feels like a dream. It's not true. And then I hear some rustling in the bin, and a guy pops out, and it's Jimmy. And he's got a guitar, and I play guitar, and he's like, "Whoa, look what I found. I found a guitar." It's like, "Jimmy, that's a nice one. Holy cow." We're just cleaning it off, and it's raining. It's all dark, and we're in the back lane in the BFI bins, dumpster diving. And so I went into my storage bin, took one of my new guitar cases, one of my guitars, and gave it to him. And he was so happy. And then I think the next day he came and he played me some music that he recorded on a cassette. And then the story gets worse. I moved back to Winnipeg, and then I guess he died that winter because of, I guess, the poisoning from monoxide when you have a heater in an enclosed camper.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, but I went from being discriminatory to a homeless guy and one of those people who says, "Why don't you just get a job or something?" to like, he was my best buddy. And, you know, so yeah, that was heartbreaking to see him go like that. But, you know, that's one story of like how the tables can turn.
And that's everyday life for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And those, again, we talk about camps, and there's, you know, deaths in camps from fires, and I guess poisoning like you're talking about as well.
Mm-hmm.
It happens, and it's so tragic, and people don't realize the loss of life on the street. And this year, you know, I hold a memorial service every year in October and November, and this year we had 100 more people that we know will pass away, and we just put up posters in shelters. And to people can write down names that they know. And we had 125 this year. And that's just the ones in the shelters that people knew, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People have no idea how desperate life on the street is.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to a friend who, I guess I'll leave his name out of it, but, you know, I'm connected with, you know, try and stay in touch. I volunteer. Mm-hmm. Now I deliver food for Matuwamats to the Interlake to a different array of people. Some have disabilities, some have addiction issues, some are homeless. And I mostly deliver pet food because I think that's another aspect is a lot of people are homeless because they can't find a home with their pets.
Right.
So, but if you want to switch the focus to another reason I'm here is to sort of push the tiny home aspect.
Right.
When I was settled on the lake after the flood happened, there's a lot of people suffering there, and a lot of, you know, most of the people there had insurance and were privileged, but I just moved back, and there's all kinds of problems. Like, if you're out of Winnipeg for more than 4 years, you have to prove your identity again. You can't get a driver's license, so you have to you have to do all kinds of things, and there's all kinds of barriers to that nobody would ever know, and they're very nightmarish, and there's nobody to call or to complain to, and it's just it adds to all the stress. But basically, you know, when you're living in a camper and you have no electricity and or in an encampment or anything, you're faced with all kinds of discrimination, like the neighbors are, why is he living there?
And
what does he do? Drugs?
Yeah.
No, I'm panicking, and I've been in bed, like you said, paralyzed with fear, and you have no home, and doors are getting slammed in your face, and you have no income. So basically, in my family, there's, you know, a lot of trades, and I was a carpenter and had many different trades. So I figured I better just hit the ground running here. So, you know, I guess one of the problems you're finding when you're homeless or having hard times in encampments is the sewage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people just, like I was helping out a partner a few days ago in a building downtown, and people were pooping right in the stairwells.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wasn't bothered by it. I was more disturbed by the fact that there's no toilets for them, right? So, but you gotta go. Where are you gonna go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I started designing my own composting toilet, and I figured, you know, taking responsibility for sewage in a ecologically sound way and having personal responsibility can give you a sense of dignity that can help you rise out of homelessness,
One of the great tragedies of homelessness is the loss of dignity and self-respect and self-worth and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so basically, that's one aspect, and that's a whole different aspect on its own. I could heat up a garage and just start pumping out composting toilets like crazy, and you know, if I didn't have to make a living and pay my bills like everyone else, I probably would do that full time. You know, just I think that would really help pushing the composting toilets in society and in the encampments, and having some sort of service saying, hey, look, this is how you do it. You can get some sawdust, some lime, some wood ash, put in a bucket. You know, you can have a urine separator. You can dump your urine on a tree. It's natural. Urine's good for plants, you know. Or you can have a service pick it up. And the composting works really well because 90% of sewage is water. And once it dries, it's basically just fire.
Have you approached organizations about funding with us?
Well, right now I have a website out.
I just took a look at it this morning.
Yeah, it's called the I have to remember what it's called here. I just got it, the Winnipeg Tiny Echo Home Hub.
Yeah,
and it's the website just got up. I'm just trying to figure out how to navigate accessing funding and figuring that out. But my key takeaway to this whole day here is I really believe the way I paved my way out of homelessness is a really realistic opportunity for most of the homeless people to get out of homelessness, which is, if you put them in an apartment or a house, sure, okay, oh yeah, we got them into a home, but now they're faced with bills and mortgage and landlords and rent.
That's why folks don't want to be housed a lot of times.
Exactly.
So, and we run into that set, you know, fairly often. And this is something that neither the city nor the province nor the federal government knows, is that it's difficult to house folks because they've had bad experiences, right? And they never want to be housed again, or, you know, it takes a long time to convince them that's the best thing.
Yeah, the whole aspect of renting for profit is an issue too, I think. But if you have tiny homes on wheels, hear me out here. I've really thought about this, and I had to ask myself when I was out in rural Manitoba in a camper, what am I going to do? So it took years of, you know, and there are people out there. Just because there's no news cameras or you know, it's rural, there's people out there surviving and doing things that we don't see because they're not in big cities, right?
And you know, the thing about rural homelessness is that, and even rural housing, there's no very little funding for rural Canada from the federal government for housing. It just it's one probably 2% of what the urban areas get, and so it's very much more difficult to build housing out in the rural areas because there's just no federal funding for it. I'm not sure why the federal government forgets about that, but they do.
Yeah, rural life. Geographically, I guess it's just as a whole unique set of challenges and circumstances itself. It's often left, hidden. It's a new form of hidden homelessness, like hidden rural homelessness, right?
Yeah. But folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg. Today we have a person with lived experience on the show, and we don't have people with lived experience often enough. And every story is similar, but every story is different because and the needs are different. And, today we're talking about rural homelessness, for example. And people in rural Manitoba have a much more difficult time exiting homelessness because the money's not there and the help is not there and the support staff is not there. I think we'll just take a quick music break and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Take care.
This car has seen me at my best and at my worst. This car carried me while I laughed and it carried me when I cursed. This car. Stormy, snowy weather, it's gone through it all. Anywhere the road goes into many ports of call, this car. This car has room enough for me and my guitar. This car. It's never complained about the road and how far. This car. It's gone more than 500 k's. Good roads, bad roads, and some sketchy back ways. This car's a little like my heart. It never gives up, and it'll always start. This car. Well, this car may be old, but it's still rolling. This car. Not the kind of car. This car. It's seen more of me than any place that I rent. And it may be the best money I have ever spent. This car. This car has always had me behind the wheel. This car. So many ways. It's been every little place that live music plays. This car. It's scratched up a little like my heart. It'll never give up and it'll always start. This car. Doesn't mind if I sing along. This car. It's got me out of trouble and it's never done me wrong. This car. I swear sometimes it goes on a will and a prayer. But I never doubt that it will get me somewhere. This car. It's scratched up and dinged just like my heart. But it'll never give up. This car, this car, this car.
back, folks, and you're listening to actually the Hope Alley of No Fixed Address show coming to you from live on this Friday morning from the University of Winnipeg and CKUW 95.9 FM. And it's minus 14 out there. It's a bit, it feels a bit dampish, and it's like it's, for this time of year, it's a good temperature. We're lucky to have this kind of weather, but not for folks who are out there. And if, again, we have to say it every week, if you're going to Tim's, you're going to Robin's, you're going to Starbucks, and you can afford to buy a coffee, you can afford to buy two maybe, and please do that, and give it to somebody that's going to be sitting right outside the door at the Tim Hortons. You can't miss them, they're right there, and so be kind. But today we are talking with a person of lived experience, Adam Dahlwin, sorry, and he's an advocate for tiny homes, and we just talked about composting toilets. Sorry, yes, I had a mind blank there for a second, And he's also has a website on tiny homes. The music we just played was from Connie Calder, and the song was
The Cars.
Yeah, and so we like to play local talents on the show, and so we do. But talk to me a little bit about your ideas for tiny homes.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Feel free to cut me off if I go on a long tangent.
No worries. No worries. We have time.
But basically, I'll just dive back into what I was talking to before. It all started kind of sitting there with, you know, my head in my hands and feeling bad about myself and depressed and stuck and I, like you always say, paralyzed. That paralyzed feeling,
yes.
It's
the worst.
You really can't move. So you have to kind of get moving, right? So, or you're gonna die, or you're not gonna make it. So, you can't let it beat you. So I basically, with my trades knowledge, like I'm one of the top trades techs in the city right now with a good company, and I. This company's given me an opportunity to take my skills and put it to better use. But the reason I'm a good tech now is because it took me years of slaving and suffering and sacrificing just to get out of homelessness. And it is so hard to climb out. You know, like, basically what you're seeing with all these encampments and anybody on the streets, like... Even walking to this radio show from my home, I have a home and I live in the West End. I'm not a rich guy. You know, I could only afford a home in the West End. I pay mortgage now like everyone else. Okay. But I see people, eating up bins on the way here, needles.
Yes.
And, I see it all. And I enjoy the walk here because it keeps me in touch. I don't want to become... I'll never forget the lived experience. Once you have lived experience, you'll never forget it. And you know that.
No,
so,
sure.
So basically...
it's what drives me personally every single day.
Yeah. So basically, I guess with the tiny home aspect there, you have to, obviously, when you're living somewhere, number one, you have to have a shelter over your head.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you have to have a place to poop and pee, right?
Yes. Yep.
And that's important. And that leads to a whole other aspect of what we're seeing with the city of Winnipeg, failing to offer enough toilets for people on the streets, right? Mm. Like we can dive into that too. But so that's why I came up with composting toilets.
Mm.
And I researched it and figured, and it's actually water-based sanitation is actually not a very ecologically sound thing. Like, look at the funding for the new sewage plant on Main Street's constantly, it's going to cost us taxpayers more money all the time,
and
right?
It's being pushed back and back and back.
Yeah.
And the cost keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah.
It's a problem. And what will be a real sticking point on that is city bylaws. And... and the problem right now is the city has bylaw officers going out to encampments to make sure that they're abiding by city laws. And, and one of those things is, again, everything they do hurts people on the street. Mm-hmm. For example, now with Cindy Gilroy, my counselor, and we speak fairly often, and she knows I disagree with her on stuff, but we still have a really good relationship, and she does help people individually in her ward, and I'm so happy that she does that, and she's got a huge heart. But they came up with a motion to on places where people can camp, mm-hmm. and they give 10 general areas where people could not camp. And what it did is it says, well, you can't camp anywhere. Mm. You cannot camp anywhere. Basically, you can't camp by major thoroughfares. You can't camp close to let's see, you could only be within so many distance of public parks and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on. And there's 10 areas where people can't camp. And so it leaves them basically nowhere to camp. And it's a tough go.
So they're basically criminalizing homelessness. It's another step to criminalize homelessness.
They are doing that. And you know, they complain about the needles. And here's a really good example, and you'll understand my frustration with this. I live down by Central Park, and there's a lane going right down beside the park and the Quest on Ellis. Mm-hmm. And in Central Park, there's a playground that's right on the corner of Cumberland, not a playground, but a splash pad park on the corner of Cumberland and Carlton and Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And then you go up, and there's a playground with swings and all kinds of things there for the kids and merry-go-rounds. And there's a hill, and there's a slide that goes down the hill. And there's people that park out or sleep on top of the hill quite a bit. But one day I went down the alleyway because that's the way I get to Portage, and there was one tent. Great. And I kept walking by, and I started giving these people water and sandwiches and things. And I spoke to really nice folks, and no mm-hmm. signs of needles, mm-hmm. no signs of needles. And so about 2 weeks later, there was a second tent. Mm. And then a few days later, there was a third tent. Mm-hmm. And then there was a fourth tent. And I kept going by and feeding all these things. I said, this is going to draw a lot of attention. You know, they were parked beside the hill, in between the fence and the hill. And they were totally harmless there. They're away from all the from the kids, from the splash pad and the playground. And they were harmless. Mm-hmm. And there were no needles. And they were clean. But one day I walked by, and I went by every other day, give them, well, every day for water, every other day give them something to eat and that kind of thing. But one day I walked by, and all the tents were gone, mm-hmm. totally cleaned out, and it was a clean camp. And I phoned Cindy. I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I don't even know anything about that." And I phoned a few other agencies, and nobody would admit to cleaning them up, oh. but somebody did, mm-hmm. right? And that made the student want to tell me, because I get pretty agitated about this kind of stuff. But this is the problem with the city and the province, is that they don't understand. And they removed these people for no reason. They were far enough away, because they're supposed to be 50 yards from a playground and mm-hmm. 50 yards from splash pads and that kind of thing. But there was no reason to move them. Mm-hmm. But because of the lack of understanding, and my question is, where did they move them to? Because there's no housing.
Right.
There's
right.
zero housing right now. Right.
Yeah. No, I saw, I think it was on local Winnipeg news last week, they were interviewing some of the homeless or houseless people mm-hmm. from encampments, yep. and it was unique to see encampment lived experience perspective. Mm-hmm. They were actually interviewing the people in mm-hmm. the camps, and they were all saying the same thing you said. They're just going to push them somewhere else.
Yep.
Right, so it's a waste of resources. It's hurting them more. You're just re-traumatizing them, and yes. it's just you're not really solving the problem.
It isn't, and you know when our our premier came up with this 30-day plan that he got from Texas. Everybody went traveling on down to Texas to learn more about what they were doing. And there's a difference between Houston and Canada and Winnipeg. Houston does not have the right to housing in their constitution, in their state constitution. We do in Canada. Mm. And they had a 30-day plan, but in their 30-day plan, they brought the police in every 30 days to clean up the camps and send people on their way. Mm. And so WAP wakes up in the middle of the night and says, hey, we're going to do a 30-day plan. And so, and his 30-day plan is to go into the camps, and we're going to give you 30 days, and then we're going to tear down your camps, and we're going to give you housing. Well, that plan didn't work out very well for very long. I think it ended after about 3 months, that particular. Number one, there are trampling on their human rights, because in the Constitution, everybody's got a right to housing or not to be housed. And in the Constitution, it says you have a right to housing, but it doesn't stipulate between housing apartments or campments, right? And so what they were doing is destroying the people's homes, which is what they are, destroying people's homes and attempting to put them and forcing them into housing, which, of course, you can't do, and it never works. We see that every single day. You have 15 to 20% retention rate. The housing program I run, we have 90% retention rate because we treat everybody with respect, and the people that look after them are people with lived experience, and we don't force anything. And so they stopped giving the 30 days notice. There's too much of an uproar, and they're legitimately open to lawsuits on that, and I think it kind of scared them off. And so also, in our city, we do not have enough housing that is geared to income or that people on welfare can afford. And so they had some, but it just didn't... we just didn't have enough. And sure, we put them in Shalom, and Main Street Project had a project they were working on together on Furby, and they've housed some good people in there, about 40-some-odd folks. And they say they've housed around 100 people, but they also don't talk about the number of people that have left simply because they're not comfortable in the housing and don't want to be housed. What is your opinion on forced housing or this situation?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of aspects to that. I'll just cut straight to the chase that you see it on the news, and they're saying it themselves, that it's not sustainable and it's not affordable, which is why it isn't. You know, I'm pushing the tiny homes because I think one aspect with tiny homes is, for me and my website and my business, is I've built a few, they call them earthships or tiny homes, but I've come to the conclusion now that I've climbed and forged my way out of homelessness, you know, because, you know, I had to learn from trial and error. Yes. But there's also, like you said, with the enforcements, it's not only in encampments. As soon as you put up a trailer, you see all the time in rural Manitoba, this is what I see, the homeless people or people who are challenged, they put a wood stove in their camper. Yep. Oh, right away, what do you see? A bylaw officer, yep, right there.
Of course.
Sorry, you can't. Okay, so what? There's no housing out here. You're going to take away my wood stove in the winter because you're protecting me, but I'm going to freeze to death tonight. How does that make sense? Where's the hypocrisy there?
Again, there's so much of that going on. For example, we were talking about solutions for heating, and one of them was generators. So one person from the city says, an indigenous person, said, well, we can't give them generators because they'll sniff the gas. Talk about, you know, the wrong way of thinking. We can keep people from dying of hypothermia, but they're judging the folks and stigmatizing them and saying, well, no, we can't do that because they're going to sniff the gas. Oh, my goodness. Like, this is the kind of thinking that we have to deal with, and the kind of thinking that is going to keep any progress on housing moving forward. It just doesn't work with that kind of thinking.
Yeah, that's stereotypical prejudice for sure, and that's from a lack of lived experience and awareness for sure, right there.
But folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. And we're talking with a lived experience gentleman here, Adam Dolan. And the barriers and the challenges of moving forward. And one of the things I want to ask you, and because this is always a huge problem with tiny homes, is where do you park them?
Right. Okay, well, like I was stating, I think that my takeaway would be that what I've concluded with 10 years of building these tiny homes and paving my way out of homelessness mm-hmm. is putting them on wheels. Mm-hmm. If they're on wheels, mm-hmm. you can move them.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has a problem, move it here.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem, move it here. Okay, mm-hmm. we got these individuals some dignity, gave them some time to rest. Mm-hmm. They found a home now.
Mm-hmm.
Park the tiny home in a lot, store it. As soon as it's needed, tow it out again.
Yep.
The versatility is a key takeaway. And there's probably about 10 key takeaways. One would be a self-sustained sewage system, which mm-hmm. you would have a composting toilet with a urine collector. Sure, you got to figure out where to put the urine.
Yep.
You could drain the urine into a leaching mm-hmm. pond or just mm-hmm. dump it. If you had a green space nearby, you could just dump it on trees. Once again, there's bylaw considerations, or you could have pickup for it. There's a lot of different aspects, but if you take out the infrastructure of building the drainage of sewage and mm-hmm. water-based sanitation, dry sanitation is the key mm-hmm. to solving most of the sewage problems in the world, I think, because then if it's only one or two people, or really just one person mm-hmm. living in there, then you tap into the affordability aspect. Okay, well, a composting toilet's a few $100s.
One of my things in St. John's, when I was out on the East Coast, they had tiny home villages and designated for the tiny homes. I think our city is not that farsighted, does not have the insight to do that sort of thing. And there's so much NIMBYism going on that it's tough. And some people say, well, let's park them outside. I had a guest on the show here who was a candidate for mayor, and they said, well, let's put them outside the perimeter. But the problem is, then they're not anywhere near service providers. And people need to be near the core area, near the service providers, mm-hmm. whether it's Osborne Village area or the core or other areas where there are service providers. And who is going to not be a NIMBY and allow, say, 10 tiny homes to mm-hmm. be located, mm-hmm. In their area? And the city's seemingly does not want anything on their property. So what do we do? And this is the problem. The city right now is they are so lacking in the ability to consult with the folks. And they came up with a plan, which is part of the accelerated housing fund that the federal government puts together. And they say affordable housing, but it's only 80% of market, which is not affordable,
mm-hmm.
and they want to have four plexes in neighborhoods, and people are just really fighting that because mm-hmm. this is not our neighborhood. We do not want these things here, and that's not even going towards homeless housing. And NIMBYism is such a big thing. I was a NIMBY. I lived in River Heights. I lived on Wellington Crescent. And I actually had people in those days. Camps were not prevalent like they are today. Mm-hmm. Maybe you might see one or two kicking around here and there.
Yeah.
But there was a camp on the riverbank right behind our building, and I could see it every single day. So mm-hmm. I fought to get that camp removed too. That was me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can understand people's feelings on these things because that was me. And so one of the big things is people don't understand that folks need to be housed. They need somewhere to live, and right now, the camps are a favor, are a plus to the city and the province because there's not enough housing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of can we work with these folks? Okay, Halifax, for example, is a really good example of how things can work,
mm-hmm.
where they have designated camps in two parks. They have mm-hmm. somewhere like 60 tents, and they work with them. And the parks are clean and spotless, and they actually work with the people. But our city does not have the ability to communicate with with the folks. And now they have the bylaw enforcement officers going out, which is just the wrong term to begin with. And they're going out with baseball bats instead of being able to communicate properly. The whole thing is, where would we park? You know, and you can't just park them in a parking lot of a Walmart or anything, because they'll be gone in the next day. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. The whole thing, I believe in them, but I also know the issues that confronts people when they're trying to put these things in force and outside the perimeter is a place that they could, but then people are not with services, right?
Well, I think those are some really good points, and you nailed it with the city and the bylaws. Mm-hmm. Like some of these, like I've read the booklets on bylaws in rural municipalities in Winnipeg, and there's still some bylaws in there from 1920 where a horse isn't allowed to chase the hay the hay bales or the coal trucks, you know, and they can't even replace those old archaic 100-year-old bylaws with new ones, so you can't expect them to have some forward thinking on homelessness. But I guess definitely the city would need to step up and designate some sort of compound on maybe a yearly lease, but I've done the math also. I've looked into some math, and I keep in touch with people in the missions and other people who volunteer, and I get all the emails from all the homeless organizations and stuff, and I try and stay in touch with everything, and their financials are online, so they're transparent, and I think you can, with practical thinking and forward thinking, you can come up with a lot of solutions within the budget, way less than what they're wasting out there, like you said, with enforcement and just making the problem worse.
Yeah, and the whole thing is, here's just a small example of how the city thinks about the encampments. There were two women just by themselves in a tent, and they were being harassed both by males and by the police. And so Main Street Project outreach team moved them to a safer place in the St. John's Ward. And reporter and a St. John's resident noticed that they were moving these two women along the riverbank in the St. John's Ward. So they raised a fuss about it, wrote about it in the paper. The mayor gets on the line and he starts yelling and screaming, literally, about how nobody can be setting up camps. And what Jamil and the team was doing was actually moving two women to safety. And if they were not setting up a camp, they were moving the people to safety. And about 10 days later, they managed to house them. Mm. But in the meantime, the mayor gets online and starts ranting and raving and scolds Jamil and scolds Main Street Project for creating a new camp and says we cannot be creating any new camps. And he was out of line because he was naive about the situation. He did not find out what the circumstances were. But this is the attitude towards the homeless people. They are treated like less than human. And the way the premier talks, the way even Bernadette talked, the way people talk about the homeless is like they are subjects or objects. They are not human beings, and we are never going to make a difference when you have this attitude. And that is so prevalent. Every single day when you hear somebody talk about the homeless on radio or in the media, it's like they are subjects. They are not people or human beings, and we have to start realizing that they're just like you and I, and it's going to take a long time for that to happen. And so you know people like you and me have to keep working and have to keep going on, but we're coming to the end of the show. Time goes by really quickly. Any last words that you would like to leave with our audience as a person with experience?
I just think the path out of homelessness is with dignity and giving people the opportunity to be responsible for themselves. I have the word echo in my tiny home hub website because I think the key takeaways are being able to compost your sewage and put it back into the environment, take responsibility for your life. And putting people in homes is good, but I always say if you're putting someone – There's a home, and there's a home, and then there's a home.
Yes.
If you're paying your rent to a landlord, you have no pride in your home.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. You have to ask permission to change it.
Mm-hmm. There,
you know, if you own your own home, or if you can afford a tiny home
right.
and have a place to park it, and the city gives us that, then that's. I think it's a realistic way out of homelessness, and I'm going to stand behind this tiny home business and,
sure.
and try and get it out there. And
absolutely,
yeah.
But yeah, I thank you for coming on the show. And you know, I grew up in this business. After 5 years of home, 2.5 years of homelessness, 2.5 years in recovery, being a case manager in the At Home Safe Swap program, which was a housing first program put on by the federal government, and. One of the things we didn't bring up today is, okay, you know, how will we support these folks that are in these tiny homes? And I think it's really, really important. I mean, mm-hmm. there's, you can't house people without supports, right?
Right.
And one of the things that I always look at first, I will never house a person without having supports for them.
Right.
Because they'll not stay there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the loneliness and the isolation is a huge issue mm-hmm. for folks, right? And they bring in their friends when they finally get to and trash the place and move out. Again, you know, I'll just put in a plug for housing first and housing with supports, right? It's, but I really appreciate your motivation on the tiny homes and the toilet composting toilet thing. Both are really necessary,
mm-hmm.
but it's finding the ways to do that and finding the understanding.
Right.
And you know, funds can be had after a struggle, maybe, but funds can be had. But it's changing government policy.
Right.
That is a tough thing.
Right.
But I thank you for your. Put your work on this.
Thanks for the opportunity today. It's
and
a privilege,
And thanks for coming on. And again, we have not nearly enough people with lived experience on it. And I appreciate the fact that you're doing well these days and, you know, working with, it seems like a really good organization, a good company.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the fact that that you're motivated to do all this stuff, and we all know where that comes from.
Well, I'm determined to have good news in the future, mm-hmm. and maybe I'll come on again when the tiny homes
for sure.
are out there and it's working.
love to have you on. And folks, come back next week, and we'll have somebody of interest on for you, and we will be back in person next week. But in the meantime, take care, be kind, buy that extra coffee, buy that tea, buy something to eat if you can afford it. If you cannot, don't walk by without saying anything. Don't make that person on the street invisible. It'll do so much for them. One word will do so much for anybody on the street. And again, come back next week, and I'll have another good show for you. Take care.
He kept the boots, but he had to sell the saddle. He still got the hat, but they had to sell the cattle. When the price of beef went down and the debt got higher, she took his hand when the banker said, it's time to find a buyer. They're just two lovers in a beat-up truck, two horses in a trailer, hitched together. They've got nothing in their pockets but change. But they'll carry that load down any old road through any kind of weather, out past where the buffalo used to roam, looking for a home on the range. Yodelay. Everything they own in the truck, not knowing where they'll land. He took the sign off the gate with his family name and their brand. He couldn't bear to see the house that his daddy built torn down to make room for something big enough for folks from the town. They're just two lovers in a beat-up truck, two horses in a trailer. They've got nothing in their pockets but change. But they'll carry that load down any old road
grass where the buffalo used to roam, looking for a home on the range. You're late. He got a job driving trucks. He's part-time at one of the stores. They found a place to board the horses in exchange for chores. She said, we'll make do with our old tack, and we'll eat macaroni till we save enough money to buy that saddlebag. And he wouldn't have blamed her if she'd left when everything was taken. But she's the kind that'll stand up while the whole world is shaking. Just not in her DNA to quit. And that right there's the reason that they fit. They're just two lovers in a beat-up truck, two horses in a trailer, hitched together. They've got nothing in their pockets but change, but they'll carry that load down any old road, any kind of weather, out past where the buffalo used to roam, looking for a home, home on the range, looking for their home on the range. You're the lady.
Like a ragged knife, and there's no use spending your days fixing something that broken. So you drag your heart out of the blaze, but it's still smoking. Not what you expect, not what you deserve, not the straight and narrow but the mighty curve. You found out just a little too late. Some folks have a best of 4 days, but anyway, you've got better things to do.
Better things to do.
You got better things to do.
Better things to do.
You've got better things to do than crying for love. Sometimes you gotta get in the car, fill it up, and drive away. Sometimes you gotta not listen to a single thing they say. You gotta listen to the rhythm of your feet on the street. That's the sound that's true. It means you're not beat, you're somewhere sweet and somewhere near. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but it's your life, you get to choose. You don't know where you're going, but you don't care, 'cause any place is better than there. And anyway, you've got better things to do.
Better things to do.
You've got better things to do.
Better things to do.
You've got better things to do
than crying for love.
You've got to
better things to do.
You've got better things.